This is the beginning of class 11.
Sanshi Bhuki Jushin Etosham Viravin Shinyande Yampati Sangye Shindu Mitte Uwahi emptiness with words if your words are empty. So it's a waste of time.
if words are meaningless, if everything is empty, then why bother writing your books? And he said, no, it's the opposite. Because my words are empty, then they can communicate. Because my words are empty, because they have no nature, you can understand something in there that comes from your own mind. Yeah. Okay.
You know, like the beginning of the Tao Te Ching, then whatever things you said is not the Tao. And
yeah.
Those who were saying, but everything you can say is just false because it's just limited, it's not the reality.
Oh, not like that. No, not at all. Because if you have the good deeds, I can speak words and you can and understand them, and then you can stop having bad thoughts and then you can achieve nirvana. So my words are understandable, but who gives them meaning? Yeah. They are also only labeled with thoughts. So, and the same for everything else. It's very interesting. If things aren't empty, if things have their own nature, they could never change. They could never change. The way the guy at work is going to go from being unpleasant to me to being pleasant to me to being someday a deity to me is that he's empty. If he were really that guy, he could never become pleasant and then become ultimately pleasant to me. Because he's empty, he can become pleasant to me. Because of my own projections, my own perceptions. If he weren't empty, he would always remain the like that he is. Today. I'm trying not to curse in class. I made a resolution.
What difference does it make?
It's one of the 10 non-virtues. Yeah, harsh words.
Yeah.
You keep bringing this example up.
It's a good example. I think everyone has somebody at work that they have a problem with, as far as I know.
Yeah,
I managed that department.
No, the front end of that example
had a problem with somebody.
Yeah.
Huh?
The front end of that example is very appropriate. The back end of it, however, everyone turning into deities, are we to cling to the appearance of people as suffering so that bodhicitta will function? Or, you know, do we just, at a certain point, don't need to have any bodhicitta because everyone's a deity?
The Buddhists don't miss their bodhicitta.
Well, no, he's saying everyone's going to turn into, is going to appear to you to be a deity. If that's the case, what do you need bodhicitta for? Or is that the end
all
of bodhicitta?
Do Buddhists go for refuge?
No,
are they afraid of hell and afraid of, that's the cause of refuge?
But to me, a deity is somebody who, a true deity, you know,
this is a bit.
The way you mean it.
Yeah, we'll
okay. Is somebody who's beyond suffering.
Let's go for refuge.
No,
are they afraid of hell and afraid of. That's the cause of refuge.
But to me, a deity is somebody who. A true deity, you know.
This is a bit.
The way you mean it.
Yeah, we'll
okay. Is somebody who's beyond suffering. So what's the point in bodhicitta? If everyone turns into that when you get to a certain point, then. Does that mean that by you achieving enlightenment, the whole world achieves it at the same time? Or does that mean that you're not going to be able to perceive anybody suffering anymore, so your bodhicitta won't have any function?
You...
Or are you having an example here that isn't fully...
You're aware of... It's a long story. We'll get there. It comes. Basically put, you obviously can't have any suffering. Yourself.
Right.
And according to the meaning of Buddhahood, you've achieved others' benefit completely.
Right.
Even if there are still people suffering in the world, you've achieved the ultimate good for other people
right.
by becoming.
And then you have to.
Are you aware of them suffering? Can you interact with them? Yes. You can be aware. You're aware of their suffering, but you don't experience their suffering. Something.
Yeah, but if they are appearing to you deceptively to be beings that aren't suffering,
They're not.
They're not. Well, no, he's saying that everyone's going to appear to you to be a being that isn't suffering as a deity, right? Is that a deceptive appearance or is that an actual appearance? I mean, is that the truth or is that a deception?
Doesn't he mean that you experience a pleasurable kind of sensation, not just that they're beauties, but that you don't see them as rotten, mean, whatever, you don't see their ugly sides? You have a
read the calendar.
A little bit stronger.
Read the calendar. I mean, it says that the potholes in Indian roads are caused by collective bad karma of Indians. All Indians. All Indians who ever bump on that road. You know. And from that you can draw your own conclusions. You don't need me.
So the potholes in India will disappear when you reach enlightenment? For everybody.
For them. For any person who reaches that state, there will be no potholes.
So if the equivalent, if the people equivalent of potholes, i.e. samsaric beings, will also disappear, what do you need bodhicitta
for? What do you need refuge for? Do they stop taking refuge?
How does bodhicitta function if there's nobody who's suffering?
How does refuge work if there's no need to take refuge?
He keeps saying it over and over again that the guy from work is going to, just like everybody else, is going to stop being a samsaric being.
That's a good question. It's actually the question I asked Pabunka when I was going in for his guest exam. That's the question I asked him.
So this is a good question then. This is not a frivolous pursuit.
No, it's an important question. It's an important question. That's the question I chose.
Every time you use this example,
I asked him this question.
And he said, big subject with your.
I said, it's unpleasant for a Buddha to perceive someone suffering, then he hasn't. Then that unpleasant feeling isn't that suffering for him. To have some sort of awareness of someone else's suffering. Isn't that pain to be aware of someone else's suffering? I mean, isn't it painful for a mother to watch her son suffer?
But the Buddha is beyond the point where he can experience
it. I'm sure you, but doesn't the compassion.
You can feel compassion, but you don't have the afflictive emotions.
Right.
So.
But isn't it unpleasant for him to see us mess up our lives and suffer?
This is a different subject, though. You're saying people are going to turn into beings that have no suffering. That's different from how do you perceive, is it painful to perceive beings? You can't perceive anybody who's suffering if everybody's a deity.
That's what I'm trying to ask. Shakyamuni has achieved the ultimate goal. Then does he perceive suffering?
Well, if he does not, then how is bodhicitta
effective? That's what Rinpoche said the last time in New York, like 12 years ago. So he said, well, I guess they're all going to retire, huh?
I mean, that would, what you're saying is that, what's the difference? Is it that they appear falsely to a Buddha to be deities, or magically everybody in reality loses their suffering once one person achieves Buddha?
Is water nectar or pus? Or water? You took that course, right? You had that. Who was there? We went over that. No, it's in the Madhyamika section. Is water water or pus or nectar? Or the nectar in the tongue?
Well, I suppose if it's water to a samsaric being and nectar to a Buddha, then the Buddha is going to be perceiving the emptiness of their own perceptions and say, it looks like water to me, but I recall that to some people, like to some of these beings who appear to be deities right now, to me, that's a deceptive reality to me, and actually they're really suffering, so this thing that looks like nectar to me looks like water to them.
Well, think about it.
Well, wouldn't everything's emptiness connect to that then? Because if you initially saw them as a bad person and now they're a deity, it's the same thing, really. It just depends on your perception.
Still, their nature didn't change. Yeah, their dependence didn't change and their emptiness didn't change.
I don't know if that connects to what you're saying.
I'm just saying, I mean, if everything appears to be perfect, then either that's a deceptive appearance, or it's not. And if it's not a deceptive appearance, then there's no more function for bodhicitta.
Does everything appear to be perfect? Everything just appears. Why qualify?
Well, the Buddha,
can I say one thing?
Yeah.
The Buddha perceives ultimate reality and deceptive reality simultaneously. So he's seeing...
But does he perceive it deceptively?
No. He perceives it as deceptive reality.
Good, that's a very good answer. That's a big distinction. We are perceiving deceptive reality all our lives.
Right.
But we don't perceive it
as the way they do.
We don't perceive that it is deceptive reality.
Then he has to perceive it as a glass of water also.
He perceives deceptive reality.
And a cup of nectar simultaneously.
He perceives it as nectar. And he's aware that it's only his perception, and that if he had been any different in the past, he would be seeing pus. He's also aware that you can perceive it as one. He's also aware that other people perceive it as one.
I don't think for myself that it's appropriate to ask so many questions in this sense, because if I recall, one time Buddha said that he's like being hit by an arrow, right? So he said, you are in a condition so desperate that you don't start investigating the color of the arrow, blah, 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 and all these different things. Imagining what a Buddha will be, we are in trouble. And you have to work hard on yourself to get out of trouble. So everything else, I mean, it's nice to talk about all these subjects, but it's a little bit also too far for me.
Sometimes they start from the last chapter of any book. Sometimes they'll start, like in Perfection of Wisdom, sometimes they'll start from the eighth chapter instead of the first chapter, because it explains what a Buddha is like, and it's supposed to get you excited about reaching that.
Also, that sutra, the Buddha was talking, said that sutra in reference to things he didn't talk about. I'm talking about something that Michael talks about.
Okay, anyway, this is by Nagarjuna, and this is what Nagarjuna said to people who said, well, if things are empty, then nothing works. And he said, what? Ariel.
If things are empty, then nothing works?
They criticized him.
Things work because they're empty.
Right. They only work because they're empty. They weren't empty, they couldn't work. Specifically, they couldn't change. The reason that the person that you're looking at, the reason that water can someday become the nectar, ambrosia to you, and it will, is that it's empty. If it were inherently existent, if it had its own nature, it could never be. It will never be. And that's why you can't practice the secret teachings if you don't understand emptiness. Nothing will happen. You don't understand how it could work. But because of emptiness, they can work. That those things can work. But because you understand karma, you know that they can't work if you don't do the right deeds. They never will. You can have any kind of blessing or empowerment or anything you want. If you don't do the actual deeds that will make that occur, it's impossible. It's against all the rules of karma. It's against everything you've studied. It won't happen. It's impossible. You know, and you kind of got this feeling that, you know, you'll realize something and then suddenly things will change. But it's not like that. You really do have to become perfectly good. You know? It's kind of that you think in the back of your mind, I can still keep some of my bad habits. You know? And maybe I'll still reach nirvana. No, you really do have to become perfectly good. You really can't dislike any person you meet. You really can't have any bad emotion at work. You really can't have any bad karma and still have those results in this life. It's impossible. So you make a choice. You have to make a choice. You can't keep going.
Last question.
Yeah.
And you know, in that whole concept of you have to really stop doing any bad deed and can only do good deeds.
Yeah.
It seems to me like there's this whole idea of. How do I say it? Not denial, but it's not okay the way it is, kind of like really being hard on ourselves, really saying, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. You know, the renunciation of suffering. Lots and lots and lots of negative reinforcement, you know, negative motivation. lots and lots and lots of this isn't okay, and this isn't okay, and this isn't okay, and this isn't okay, and you should be doing this instead of this, you should be doing this instead of this. And it's a, it seems to me like it's a real dispiriting approach. You know, a real approach that says, you're not okay the way you are, your behavior isn't okay, you know, the basis of your motivation needs to be fear, and that's the nature of life. And so where does the joyous effort come into this?
I think you missed a big qualifier. You shouldn't do this if you don't want to experience that. If you do want to suffer, then by all means, go out and gun everybody down.
Yeah, of course. Well, the assumption is we all do want to experience happiness, and as we try to get to happiness. And, I think we all do want to get to happiness, and that's where we're trying to get to, and it's a question of how to do it in a joyous, positive
way. I think there's illusion to find out that the things you like are leading to unhappiness.
I was in this other class the other day, and we were talking about this, and we were talking about anger. And we came to this interesting conclusion that, okay, you get angry at a guy, you realize that what you're angry at has to be a non-existing thing.
Yeah.
You realize that he has no nature of being ugly by himself. You realize that he's blank of that because to other people he looks quite nice. You realize that whatever ugliness he appears to have is coming from your own perceptions.
Yeah.
And you realize that those are forced on you. And then you try not to do them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were talking about it, and the result is that at least for the time you're having all these thoughts, you didn't get angry. You know what I mean? Well, in the moments that
you... When you don't get angry, you mean actually behave in an angry manner.
No, I don't mean that.
No, to look,
you can't have, it's very interesting in debate.
I think it starts to come up, and then
you recognize. No, yeah, well, it's there at a low level.
Yeah.
You're, we can say you're about to have anger, and then you start debating with yourself.
I
just what conflict
is.
And you've already been doing it, I assume, in the last week or two or three. You've had instances where it occurred to you, oh, this is the moment of truth. This is what he was talking about. This is when I'm supposed to see the guy's empty. Now, what was I supposed to do? And then it slips out of your mind and you get angry. And then, 10 minutes later, you say, oh, I was supposed to do something about this. But what we were talking about in the other class was that for that period, that wisdom is in, that's wisdom in your mind, the debating, the guy that says, wait a minute, you're supposed to be thinking about emptiness. At the moment of heat, wisdom cannot coexist with a nyomo. It's impossible. With a klesha, with a bad thought. During the period that you're perceiving him as empty or trying hard, at that same moment, according to Buddhist philosophy, according to the philosophy of perception, according to the study of perception, you cannot have a bad thought in your mind at that time. While you're debating, while you're starting to understand his nature as being empty, and while you're trying to think about the karma of the situation, during those few moments, it's impossible to have anger in your mind focused at the same object. It's impossible.
You mean you can't be thinking one thing and feeling another?
No.
I would
just do
that.
No. Object, no.
Don't you mean you want to keep you dominated by anger?
No, you have to be able to conceive of it,
wisdom to analyze it.
When you're having wisdom, you cannot have the emotion of anger in the same moment. They might alternate so quickly that you think you have it, but you can't. When your mind is understanding his nature, you can't have anger, and that's in fact the way you're going to get liberated. But that isn't what I want to talk about. What we were saying in the other class was that you might notice, if you try this for a while, that a side benefit, which is sort of a funny side benefit, you saved yourself 5 minutes of anger during the day. And that's pleasant. I mean, even if Buddhism doesn't exist, and if karma is not true, and emptiness means nothing, you just get angry less during the day, and it feels better. You feel better. You know, I think that's some kind of a pleasure.
It's a side benefit. You know, one of the six perfections is joyous effort. Right?
Yeah, and also what you call rejoicing.
Yeah.
Like when you think about the Dalai Lama, you know, that there's one person in the world who's got no occupation except to go around and talk about compassion. You know, and you say, yeah, that's nice. You know, this person, he could have been famous, he could have had this, that, this. Yeah. And he chooses to go around the world teaching people these things,
yeah.
teaching crazy Western people.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Then you, if you're happy, that's supposed to net you 10% of its virtue.
Well, that's great. My question is, though, is that the joyous effort is one of the six perfections of Bodhisattva, but it doesn't seem anywhere that there's any teaching about how to cultivate joyous effort, how to have joyous effort.
Fourth chapter. Fourth chapter.
It's deceptive because Gurdjieff used to talk about the monks like people that were inflicting themselves intentional suffering. In a way, because if you look at the monks in India, or you say, boy, they are cut off from the main whatever, and then you can look at monks, at least that's my experience in Nepal, in many different ways, including that one. Oh, they just withdraw from life because it's so hard to live on the street, so they retire in some moments and they have the food and they sleep for free, in a way. But these are all, I think, the distorted views of the monk, including that one of Buddha that was saying they inflict intentional suffering in terms of...
I said the same thing. Yeah, no, I think, I agree that what we've had so far was the renunciation part is meant to make you afraid and depressed.
Yeah.
And some people wrote on their homework. And I take it as a good sign. That's fine. According, you know, that's the cause for taking refuge, and until you take refuge, you're not a Buddhist. So if you have some kind of fear or depression or worry or distaste, that's renunciation and you're doing fine.
My question is, are there balancing teachings here somewhere that sort of bring this back to life as a joyous experience?
I think it's not a joyous experience as it is. We studied the six sufferings. I mean, it's not. There will be joy. I mean, I think bodhicitta, if you get into bodhicitta meditation and you really have, you know, if you meditate over a period of time and you get into this very simple thought that of fantasizing that you want everybody in the world to be happy, that you want everyone walking around every street in the world right now to get exactly the things they want. It's a very pleasant meditation. I don't think there's any more pleasant thought than that. And it's very happy, you know, it's very satisfying when you get to that point in your meditation and you just, your only feeling is that everyone, even the people you don't like very much or things like that, that they succeed and that they get what they want. That's a very healthy thought, and that's quite a happy thought. When you get good at that.
You're supposed to go towards bliss, right? And they say and that kind of bliss will be nine times higher than every kind of happiness that you can experience in the samsara. So,
yeah, well,
suffering.
Sometimes I also tell people, there's no choice. What else are you going to do? You know what I mean? If you're not going to practice these things, what's your option, you know? Is it to go on like before? I mean, you guys are poisoned. Your minds are poisoned. You can't go back.
You will not go back. In Tantra, the point is we practice seeing everything as bliss and the realm of the deities, the experience of the deities, right? I mean, it's an intentional...
I don't know. okay. We can't talk about that. Okay. Now, we have to go early tonight. We have to go quick tonight. We have to get out to New Jersey because we're chasing the Okay. Cocktail.
Cocktail.
Sangha.
Jogo.
Jogo.
This is colloquial Tibetan. It kind of sound like that. Cocktail.
Cocktail.
Sangha.
Jogo.
Jogo.
We gotta go up and debate a little. Middle four. Leave your books. No need.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Yeah, today.
Sangha means to debate. Dogore means we gotta go.
Is that a group? Are you?
Say that again.
D-R-U.
This one?
Yeah.
Dogore.
No, no. D-R.
Oh, are you?
Right.
Oh.
Tongue
means
to debate.
Oh.
You
corrupt
your
Can you tell me the... In English, okay? Can you tell me what you call this of an authentic teaching?
Three qualities of an authentic teaching?
Yep. So.
Oh, three qualities. Okay.
Teaching.
Teacher.
Teaching.
Must have been spoken by the Buddha?
Yeah. Chick. Give me the
It must have been.
Show.
He wants you to show him.
Show me. Come on. Give it.
My brain isn't working. It must have been by the Buddha. It must have been rendered. It must have been cleansed of all errors.
Good. By whom?
By master
teachers.
Okay.
Sumakalisha.
And it must have.
That's a girl's chain. Go over there. Can't you speed up a little bit?
No. It's slow.
That's a
girl's
chain. Go over there. Somebody love that. Give me number three. What's it? What are you waiting for? You guys are supposed to go. You ready?
We're supposed to go rank out. Is that the Tibetan way?
Show. What's number three? Some of my out now. Are you telling me there's only two?
Capable.
There's only two, maybe?
But practicing it, you have to be capable of achieving realization.
Yeah, good. Okay. If nobody can get anywhere, then it's good. Bring my hand. No, it's not. No, it's not good.
No, get your vacation. Get your
answer. Nobody can tell me the three qualities of a good student.
Oh, that's easy.
The three qualities of a good student.
Ah, yeah, I love that.
I'm going to be sitting over on the end over here. They must be a proper vessel for the teaching.
Three qualities.
They shouldn't have the problem of the pot. The three problems of the pot.
Can't you blow in? You have a blow on me. I didn't say the three problems to avoid. I said the three qualities that
they have to have effort and be willing to apply the effort to the teaching.
Is that the first quality of a student?
No, it's not the first quality.
You're going to count from the backwards?
They must be intelligent enough to even find the teaching in the first line of the
mind.
Open mind.
Yeah. Open mind is
Right. They have to be a proper vessel, which means they have to be receptive and open minded to the teaching.
Okay, yeah, not unbiased. What's number two? Give a shot. Hey, come on, shot. Cartoon.
Cartoon.
Shut your mouth. Show.
You must be willing to put up with treatment like this.
The nice thing about the bit is if you get to do it to somebody else. Yeah, give it a shot. I guess there's only one, right?
No, I thought we said it's intelligent and receptive and effort. They have to have a lot of effort, practice hard,
willing to work hard. Is that the correct order?
I think effort's the last one, intelligence is the first one, and unbiased is the second one.
What's the correct?
Unbiased, intelligent, willing to strive.
Good.
Unbiased
is
first. You just asked me the wrong question.
Okay, Indiana. First three of the 10 qualities of a good teacher.
He must have controlled his own afflictive emotions.
Tua, Shua, Nyeshua. Tua Kare. What does control mean?
It's called your silly monkey. Okay,
it's really interesting.
Are we supposed to be taking notes on the insults?
It must have tamed his afflictive emotion.
What does control mean?
Morality. It must have pure morality.
Ah, diga. That's nice. Okay, number two. Sumba. Niba Karisha.
He must have excellent quality.
Come on, let's go.
Number two,
you must have
more
quality,
more excellent
than
the
what's after morality? Come on. I'm gonna find some new students. You must show.
Yoshiwa.
Peaceful. What does peaceful mean? Obviously not acting up. peaceful. What's peaceful mean? Hey, you. Peaceful. She won't do what she won't do. She won't.
What do you mean, peaceful?
That's number two. What does peaceful refer to?
Morality. Mindfulness.
Subdued.
No.
He's mindful.
Three trainings and the first three qualities are the same thing. Morality, concentration on what? You come
to emptiness?
No. Great peace.
Where are you guys? He's got morality and he comes to the world.
Third one is very peaceful.
Right?
Very peaceful.
Right. High peace, Kali Shah. Yes, you are, Kali Shah. That's number six. It's the three trainings. Same. But those three words, which sound very romantic, are actually referring to the three trainings and not to this, oh, peaceful, blissful. You know? What's number three? High peace.
Mm-hmm.
What are the three trainings? Morality, concentration?
Oh, and
number three is
wisdom.
Wisdom, okay. Wisdom towards what? Towards what? Shiva. What's he wise about?
Realizing him.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay. Yeah, we have to talk about Mayimba Tao. Still. So he doesn't have to have extraordinary realization Tokpa about emptiness. We have to talk about Mayimba Tao, right?
He needs to.
You're supposed to get rowdy, not scared.
He needs to.
Yeah. Dr. Tokma Lai. So, really realizing emptiness is not a quality of a lama, right?
It's preferable if he's really realized emptiness, but at least have good intellectual understanding of emptiness.
Dr. Tokma Lai Yimaha. Is that what really realized means in that verse?
Really, really?
Controlled, peaceful, high peace.
No.
Does he have to be? Is that what it means? There's a Rapta Topa in there. It's very realized.
That's number.
Quality Yimbata. Is that one of the 10 qualities? Yimbata.
Yeah, with the deep realization of suchness, number 5.
Yimbata. Is it?
Number 3.
Number 2, you made.
Number 5.
No, it's not number 5. It's number 3, you made.
No, no, but deep realization of suchness is number 5.
I thought number 2 was a deep realization of suchness.
Direct perception of emptiness. Control of peace.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay. A little bit bigger perception, okay? Number 3 is a perception of emptiness. Number 5 is a deep perception.
But also, you said 5 was qualified by the fact that they at least had to have the intellectual.
That's true.
Number 3 is having. Number 3 is having attained. Number 3 is having attained coma bias.
Number 4. Wait, who am I kissing right now? Number 4,
Overreaching scriptures.
What's it? So it's enough only to be. It's not enough only to be realized, it has to be rich in description also?
Yes.
Mungi Chupa. Yimbata. What's number 6? I gotta keep going to number 6. That's the usual way.
Okay, so that he has to teach in a loving way?
Gotcha. How many of the 10 qualities refer to him, and how many of the 10 refer to his quality of teaching?
I remember 6 and 4.
Yeah, 6 and 4, right. So number 6 is his personal quality, or how he teaches?
Now,
what's number 6?
That should be better than you.
Yeah, you didn't have that. Okay? You didn't have a Yuma, huh? Give me at least 2 of the 4 things you have to have about teaching, how to teach. Okay. So, Market in. This is the way to review. You can do it in about half an hour. Yeah, okay.
That's the last one.
You mean you didn't hear beautiful bells going on?
That bird is number 9.
Say wait, that means. Joa Fang, look that! Yeah. Say something, yeah.
Happy to teach him. Joyfully.
No. Is
he? Yeah.
Or he teaches that you'll have
just
you
for.
Right,
Master teacher. He knows your level and he teaches in the right order for you. Okay, what's number 2? We got number 1 and number 4.
What?
Of his 4 qualities, we only have 2, right? He doesn't get tired of repeating over and over again. And he teaches in the right order. And according to you,
you're an image of the
love of Christ. Here we have the compassion.
Here we have Yuma. He teaches out of love?
Love and compassion.
Yeah, Yuma. What's love mean here?
It teaches without reason for of making money or
good, good,
personal
good.
Profit.
Yeah, that's not what love means. It
really
not like, he teaches for the love of it, right? Okay, for the love of the student, not out of he wants to get famous or get money or anything like that. Okay, we got 3 out of 4. We're missing one still. Mr. Carey.
Shaw. Okay. He's out of the delusive mind. He never get the and you don't. You never get turned down by any, you know.
That was the last one.
I thought he was the very embodiment of love and teaching.
That's that he's not teaching for money.
And I thought the separate one was that he's not in search of praise. I thought there were two separate things.
No.
He never gets his chorus.
That's
number 10. You want number 8?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine? Sure.
We're missing
no, mine is the image of love. Effort.
Okay. Oh, Tsunche. Yeah. He makes great efforts. What does that mean?
He puts up with students.
No. What made something special? What was it? You studied for
money. Effort.
What did effort mean?
He would continue to teach. He will be there. He just felt way to teach.
He makes effort. He makes the effort because he enjoys it, not for any other reason.
That's what it was. Getting things and not getting things. Nice. Need a money. Need a money.
To feel good and not feel
good. Good. Right? Didn't mean that. I didn't have anybody get that.
To be well known and not to be well known.
Jeez. Need a money.
To get praise and not to
be
well known. Right.
Get imbaha. You guys are supposed to give her a hard time. Come on. Didn't you get imbaha?
You're in the wrong class.
You don't want to react to them and you don't want to...
Tujichi. Finally, someone gave me a good answer.
Woo!
Okay, who did we think of?
What a lot.
Yeah, you didn't make out the shaggy mebeacher. Changchuki Sam. Shaggy mebeacher. There's no way in the world to generate bodhicitta. Samgye shaggy mebeacher. No method in the universe to create bodhicitta. To get bodhicitta. Changchuki Sam, Rangi, whatever. Are you telling me there is a way to get it? You say, right, that's what I said. What are you going to do about it? Okay, then show me. Show me any method to create bodhicitta. Yeah.
Can we?
Yes. There's an air conditioner under there. Everybody
wants
to turn
it on. There's a lot of hot air in here.
I back away from the stew.
You could say that again.
Oh. Didn't you say that when you were a kid?
Duh. Yeah, right. You know, I sound like I feel like Vinnie Barbarino.
Don't look like Vinnie Barbarino in your past life.
No, I felt like him before, and I feel like him again.
People from Brooklyn are really
good at that. Yeah, right. Like, there's no such thing as the eight worldly tongues. Right, yeah, sure.
What did you
smoke with
this?
Yeah.
any method
by either exchanging yourself or others or thinking of others as
right,
your mother.
Touch it! Thinking of people as your mother is a method for generating bodhicitta?
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess seven means one, right?
What do you mean?
Seven and one are the same thing?
Seven.
And one. Seven, please. One. Seven. One. Two. One up. Okay, meow.
Well, they're both numbers.
Yeah, are they the same number? So, you name it up. Chikmazo meata. I guess there's only one link in the seven cause and effect steps for getting bodhicitta, right? Only one, right?
Oh, no.
There's only one step in the seven step process.
There is thinking of others as your mother. Remember your mother's kindness.
Not too bad.
Repaying your mother's kindness.
What's the next time? You're supposed to keep going. I'm supposed to go.
Come on, do it right.
Number five, please. Shut up. Just to get us anything. It's already 8:30. You're still on number five.
Great compassion.
Koincho.
Love.
That's the Chris word.
Love and
religion
to take away their suffering.
Take on the responsibility. To do it yourself, even if nobody else does.
Number five. Number six. Sure.
Number five. Extraordinary
personal
responsibility.
Is that what's the requirement?
Great responsibility.
That's number seven. Seven. Shop. Remember the shop. Remember America. There's only six steps?
No, but I can't remember.
What is it? How can you say there's two methods if you don't know the second method?
I know part of the second.
That's why it's called the seven-part method.
Bodhicitta is the way to get bodhicitta?
Sure.
Why do you become a bodhisattva?
No.
You want to be a Buddha so you know how to help everybody.
So I guess the cause and its effect can exist at the same time, right?
This is the method for the Venerable.
The method and the result exist at the same time?
At the end, yeah.
So a cause and its result can exist at the same time? Can a cause and an effect exist at the same time or not? Can a cause and its result exist at the same time? So an acorn and the tree that acorn grew, can it exist at the same time? So how can the number seven step of getting bodhicitta be bodhicitta?
Because of the wish.
The method and the result are much different.
No, we'll get there. Okay, next we go. Number. No, I guess there's no two truths, huh? Nobody can tell me the two truths. Dama du means wrong. Of course, there's two truths. Demani ya. Are there or not? Demani are you?
No.
Are there two truths or not? There's no deceptive truth and ultimate truth. Are you saying deceptive truth isn't true? So deceptive truth isn't truth, right?
No.
So we don't call it truth, right?
We can call it that.
You got it. Good answer. And she stuck to her gun, see? You gotta act like you know what you're doing. Even if you don't. Half the time you win anyway. Very important in the debate. Just keep going. Okay, still well. My ma ha le dam. Emptiness and the appearance of things are completely contradictory. Nothing could be empty and also be deceptive truth. They're contradictory.
What are you, crazy?
Okay, good, yeah. Are you telling me they're not contradictory?
Yes.
They're not? Say duh.
Duh.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Sure. Why not?
They both exist.
So crows and owls are not contradictory. Huh?
What and owls?
Crows and owls.
Are not contradictory?
Yeah, there's a Tibetan saying that crows can't stand owls.
Okay. Maybe even cats and dogs.
When an owl is sitting on a branch, a crow will never sit on the same branch. So, crows and owls like each other, right?
Yeah, crows and owls don't like each other.
They both don't exist.
How do we go from liking each other to existing?
Do they exist or not? Exist or not?
They appear to exist and they exist.
Do crows and owls exist or not?
Yes, they exist.
Okay, they exist. So, no, they don't, because they are. They're mutually exclusive.
Because they're mutually exclusive, they don't exist.
They don't exist. That's what you said.
No, I didn't.
You said the opposite.
The opposite of what?
You said they exist because they're not mutually exclusive.
They exist because they're not. I never said that.
Oh, touch it. So I guess emptiness and karma are contradictory. Mutually exclusive. If one's true, the other can't be. True. So if one's true, the other can't be true.
No, I didn't say that.
You're
making this up.
So you say they're not? Now you say they are contradictory? Now you say they are contradictory?
Karma and emptiness are not contradictory.
You say exclusive?
They're not. contradictory.
Are they mutually exclusive?
Do they exclude each other? No, they do not exclude
each other. Ah, good. Then that's a test of something existing, right?
Whether
they're mutually exclusive or not. You said because they're not mutually exclusive. You said they're not mutually exclusive because they exist. That's what you said.
I said they
don't. That's what you said.
Don't.
You want to change it now? Why don't you change it?
Because we have recorded.
Yeah.
They don't exclude each other.
No one that don't know any major. Do they exclude each other or not? Can something be both or not?
Yes, they can be both.
What? Church. I'm the church. Let's talk about this box.
Yeah.
Don't worry about half. Is it emptiness?
It has emptiness.
Oh, good answer. Yeah, don't worry about it. Has emptiness?
Uh-huh.
You are come.
Duh.
Duh, good, good, good. Sure. What's its emptiness? Can you see its emptiness? Don't worry, you are come. Can you see its emptiness?
No.
How can you say it has emptiness if you can't see its emptiness?
Emptiness is absence.
How do you know it has emptiness if you can't see it? If you can't perceive its emptiness, why are you telling me it's empty?
Because I can't see it.
Then you can't see photons in this room or whatever.
Yeah.
They don't exist or what?
No, they're simply beyond my visual perceptive capacity.
All right. So is this box empty or not?
It has emptiness, yeah.
Good. So this box has emptiness.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have dependence. Maybe.
Yes, it has dependence also.
What's its dependence? Suppose you're an Abhidhamma.
Okay.
We say in the monastery, put on the Abhidhamma hat.
It has causes. It has trees and factories and work.
And that's its dependence, right?
Yeah, it depends on those things.
Okay, Mayibaha Kale. Rangiba. Chena Rangiba Shamusha. Where the Rangiba hat? So tentacle.
Okay.
Yeah. Tenda Digi Tenda Kalisha. What is its dependent origin? Digi Tenda Kalisha.
Well, the first school would be the causes, the second school would be the parts of the box, the lid, the bottom, etc. What are you talking about?
The parts are extended imaha. The parts are its dependent origination? What are you talking about?
It depends on its parts to be.
So
that's what I'm talking about.
So dependent origination depends on its parts. Imaha.
Dependent origination means that it depends on its parts for its existence.
Ah, that works it. Now finally we got to it. Yeah, somebody got it. What's the ultimate position?
It's merely imputed.
What's its emptiness? I'm sorry, what's its dependent origination?
It's merely imputed.
It depends. You always have to say it, and it depends on blank for its existence. That's how you state it.
You mean in a debate?
No, even in English. Its dependent origination is that it depends on me. What?
To give it a name and a label.
To exist, it depends on me receiving
it
a certain
way.
Can we say
for? I was
going to
state it differently. You just
said
give
it.
Shoda.
Shoda. Shoda. Shoda.
Let's hear it. Let's hear what you were going
to
say.
I was going to say it was merely imputed in dependence on conceptual designation. And a basis of imputation.
Trying to get
this job. Is he debating his one-to-one?
It, you know, if we got into it, if you guys wanted to say, oh, let's get rid of it, I mean, three people would jump up and start going at it. At the beginning, it's very ordered. And at the end, it's this big riot. There's a big crowd. Everyone's screaming.
We mean
after about the Dark Malakoff, are you telling me that no self exists? Are you telling me no self exists?
Yes.
Dark Malakoff. Yeah, good, good, good. Say the.
The.
Duh. Right. I mean, that's what I said. Yes. Okay. Now, Rujia Miata. So Rujia doesn't exist, right? Rujia Miata.
No.
Duh. Oh, good, good, good. No. Yes. What?
Duh.
Okay. Duh.
No. No. Yes. Maybe.
Oh, Rujia does exist.
No.
She doesn't exist. No. Who am I debating with?
That's your name.
Yeah. What's the noise that you utter when it's like, yeah, right on? You know, how do you do that? And you go, woo.
No, woo means you didn't get it. Did you?
Oh, well, what's the one that means that you got it? Yeah.
They don't do that.
You forgot that one. You never heard it when he was over there.
All right, that's all. Now, what's the finalist mean? By the way, that's also the stuff on your final. There will be nothing on your final that's not on your quiz. You have to study your quiz. You don't need to know the verses.
We didn't have that same quality to the teaching on the quiz.
I didn't study it. It'll only be things on the quiz. Okay. It'll only be things on the quiz.
I found very troublesome the yellow book when it talks about the schools. It's very confusing.
Uh-huh.
I read it three or four
You'll
times.
Have 5 years of it.
I just don't understand.
Shamo, you will put on the habit things. We will be Abhidharma for a year. And then we will be Margisba Satyajitas for a year. Don't worry. By the end of that, you'll believe their position. And then you'll hear the next one.
Can I ask you something?
The Buddha taught them all for people of different abilities.
Can I ask
some people
you?
Couldn't handle the one, the final one.
Can I ask you something right now? Because today came in my mind as a solution because I was debating with Janet and she was saying the object of sight exists, let's say that fridge exists, right? It's not that it doesn't exist at all because according to the last school, it exists only if I put the fridge name and the concept with something and keep the name frozen, whatever, right? But it seems that the other lower school, they still hold truth in the sense the fridge exists because it's made of part and because of those causes.
Independent of mind.
It exists conventionally.
Independent of my thinking.
What?
Independent of my perception.
Independent of
whether
you naming and conceiving.
Yeah.
Then the fact is that for every single thing that exists in this world, we name it. So it seems that they don't exist without name. But really, the object exists because it's based on these parts and causes.
That's
it's
also true.
Outside you,
that,
you name it.
If you name the parts, that's true. Okay. Now you guys start. Who's writing with whom now? Nietzsche's also going.
I'm going.
Are you driving?
I have three.
And it seems to you the first time to be violent or something, but it's very healthy. And if you do it with a good heart and friendly, and you're just chutzpah, you know, and it should be like that. And what it means is that when it comes
it's part of assertiveness training, right?
When you're meditating, it gets you into a state of mind where you say, I know what I know. I've ripped apart what I know. I've had people yell at me, question me, debate me, challenge me on what I know. And I made mistakes, and then I fixed my positions, and now I know what I know. And what I know, I know. And I know why I know it, and I know what's wrong with other positions. And I've heard them all. And I can defend my position. And then mentally, when you're meditating, you know that you're right. I mean, that's how you know you're right, is reasoning. So it's a very, very healthy thing. It's not, you know, don't worry about the form of it, which you must learn, and you will learn, and will use it. But you can learn a lot faster. You know, you go home. Michael Wick was with me the other day studying his quizzes, and he fell asleep like three times.
He always does that.
And you're not going to fall asleep today. You know? And you struggle. You have to struggle, and it hurts, and it's unpleasant.
And monks do drop out because they can't take the heat of the debate. But don't worry about that. Just do it. Just do it. And it's very, very healthy. And you can learn so much so fast. And then people, when you have your students and people question you, you're cool, you understand your position, you've been through everything before, you know the objections to the position already, you've already handled them hundreds of times, and you're just able to lead people clearly, and you're able to think clearly about what you believe. And it's very good, very healthy. So don't think it's... we'll have fun. It was very hard for me the first few years to do it.
Oh, you embraced
it. We don't know what you're saying.
I didn't know what they were going to say. I couldn't understand
that. Do you have to answer in Tibetan?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
So,
is
it da? Is it also designed to get your ego right in your face, too?
It is. You will never reach the heights of the Geshe, you know, if you can't be humbled. If you can't take it, being beat in public and humiliated in public, you won't get there. If you want to preserve your...
But nobody can see the Tibetans blushing.
No, what do you mean? They get red.
I turn bright red.
No, don't worry. You be good. And I swear, you know...
And my eyes
fill
with tears.
You know, so more than it makes you sure of what you know. And you can help other people, because you've heard all the objections. You've been tested. You've been challenged. It's a very nice method. And it's ancient. I mean, the Buddha was using this method. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Sasi Bhagi Joshin Metajam Vira Vinci Nyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mite Ruwagi Jogunanda Shingva
Class 11. You have been listening to The Principal Teachings of Buddhism with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.